All right, ladies, buckle up.
It's showtime. It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Mayonnaise Talk, our 48th episode here for the podcast. I am your co-host, Julian Owens, and with me, as always,
Johnny Lightfoot.
How are you doing on our third episode remotely, Johnny?
Doing well, getting used to the new norm. I really like the way the last episode turned out, so I'm excited to get going, and hopefully eventually we can get everything back to normal.
I wish we could get back to normal, but we're going to talk about it in just a moment. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, unfortunately, even though I wish it could. But nonetheless, we're going to talk about, again, movie delays for the third episode in a row. We're going to talk about Michael Keaton returning as Batman, and we're going to talk about a couple of movies that we've seen before we get to the big one, The Lodge. So before we get into Michael Keaton as Batman, we're going to talk about movie delays yet again. So, like we talked about 2 weeks ago, Tenet was pushed till the last week of July, and Mulan was supposed to be the 24th of July, if I remember correctly. Now, both of them have been delayed a month later in August. I don't remember the dates for both of them, but they both have been delayed until August. The new Disney Pixar film Soul, starring Jamie Foxx, will be now also delayed until November, with AMC saying that they're going to reopen next month, and Alamo Drafthouse, which is near and dear to both Johnny and I heart, is saying that they're going to reopen, doesn't have a plan to reopen, doesn't have a date for it, but they have a contentious plan that I read on their website earlier today before I went to training today about what they're going to do in terms of COVID-19 and in terms of like slowing the spread down. So Johnny, in terms of everything that's going on, besides the literal typical, like, yeah, we've seen this happen again with delaying, is there anything that like speaks out to you about what's going on right now?
I mean, it's kind of interesting to me that, so I guess Regal's going to reopen on the 10th of July.
Yes.
And AMC plans on reopening on the 15th. And I'm really curious to see how many people actually go back out already, because I don't know. I feel like, because we're here in Austin, Texas, and I think we're getting close to a second shutdown right now.
I completely agree.
We already have the mandatory masks now in public places, and it seems like every day it's a new record for cases, and like us, Florida, Alabama, Georgia, all of those places that opened up in early May, it seems like we're spiking again. And I just don't know how this reopening happens the way AMC and Regal think it's going to. And then Drafthouse, who, you know, I feel like they're going to be the safest of all the theater chains, because they've always been very responsible, and yeah, they're the only chain I know of where you have actual adults make up the majority of the employees, because it is also a bar restaurant. So you don't have teenagers who don't even clean their room responsible for cleaning the theaters. So I do feel like these responsible adults whose paychecks are dependent on the patrons feeling safe and coming and tipping well, I think they will take the job more seriously. However, I just don't know when that's going to happen. In terms of the movie releases, I wasn't shocked at all by these delays again. And I won't be shocked if in 2 weeks we hear another delay. You know, it's just one of those things.
I agree with you. You know, seeing that the numbers go from 3,000, 2 weeks ago? Yeah, 3,000 to 2 weeks ago to almost 5,000 this past week in terms of Texas, in terms of new cases per day. And here in Austin, like Johnny mentioned, our hospitalization has reached capacity, I think, in the last couple of days. So, you know, we have our stay-at-home orders until August 15th, which I highly believe that it's going to go extend a little bit further than that. To your point, like I just don't get it. I understand Regal and AMC, two of the biggest theater chains in the world, not just in the U.S., in the world, are basically saying, yeah, we need revenue. We need money. So we're going to keep in pushing and having these things released. But to your point, I don't know how many of us are comfortable with going to a movie theater, watching a movie, and being in the space of our own homes. You know, and if they were as transparent as how Alamo Drafthouse, I have to use Alamo Drafthouse as a point, but like they're the smartest ones out of all of this, saying, hey, this is our plan. This is how we're going to keep you comfortable. This is how we're going to make sure you're safe and how you can still have a great time watching the films as we're staying safe and keeping each other together. You know what I'm saying? And to mm-hmm. your point, a lot of the movie theaters, specifically Regal, like, you know, I used to have that as a summer job, you know, and I, you know, didn't really care. Just did like 3 weeks of it until I was like, nah, I can't do this anymore. I didn't move about my business, you know, but there's a lot of people who are just using it as a summer job who doesn't care, who did not try to do much, you know? So I agree. I don't know how this is going to work, especially with everything that's going on in Texas, Florida, Georgia, and how the numbers are just continuing to rise. And you're like, well, you know, we're still going to have movies coming out in 3 weeks. So I don't know. Would I put Tenet, Mulan, Soul, any of those, or even the SpongeBob movie that's supposed to be coming out, the one where they're trying to find Gary? Like, I wouldn't put those in jeopardy just to say, hey, people go to the movies. You know, I'd put out, what was that movie with Russell Crowe that came out where he's a road rage driver that's trying to kill somebody, that trailer I just saw. Like, one of those kind of. Oh. You remember the name of it?
Oh, gosh. I do not. I just know that I remember watching the trailer and seeing some stuff about it and then just being like, oh, this is interesting. And I know that film was trying to be like the first movie to come out to basically say, like, right, we're the ones reopening theaters. Unhinged.
There you go. That's what it's called. All right.
And I just don't. I don't know how that happens. I don't see it. I think a movie like that is made for streaming.
I completely agree. So that's why it's going to be interesting to see. Well, no, they're keeping it. It's still streaming, but it would have been interesting to see what it would have done in the movie theaters if they would have brought that up as a first guinea pig to see what's going on. I just wouldn't put tentpole movies in movies that you know are going to crush numbers when people actually go to the theaters as it's opening thing. So it's quite interesting to see what they're going to do. I just wouldn't do what they're trying to do, but hey, you know, you got to keep your businesses open and you don't want to close any movie theaters since AMC has opened, I think, two in the Austin, Round Rock and Pflugerville area, one right in Round Rock and another one far north, if I remember correctly. So I understand that you're trying to keep the money flowing, but at the same time, let's be smart about this, guys. Let's not try to, you know, put people's lives in jeopardy, but it's neither here or there. This is the third episode talking about it, so we can't keep beating on the same drum. So without further ado, we have some other movie news that we want to talk about. Johnny, take it away.
All right. So with the biggest news, or some of the biggest news since the shutdown, and it's, what's crazy is it seems like all of the big news for superhero stuff is coming from DC since the shutdown.
Yes.
And I feel like Marvel is like, we can't announce anything because you have to see the movies first. Like, you need to see Black Widow. Like, it was like, they were like, we had plans to announce stuff at like Comic-Con in July, but we can't because nobody's seen Black Widow.
Yep.
But yeah, so DC announced they are currently in talks to bring Michael Keaton back. Now, folks might know Keaton, notorious for the 1989 and 1992 portrayal in Batman and Batman Returns, respectively. They are considering bringing him back in The Flash initially, as part of this whole Flashpoint thing, to where he would be an older Bruce Wayne a la Batman Beyond, which I think is awesome. I've always thought Batman Beyond is a fantastic story, and I think that it is a different take on a character that many people, including you and I, really, really like.
Yes.
And going a step further, they're talking about using him as kind of a Nick Fury character moving forward in their multiverse, potentially in a Batgirl movie as a mentor. Within the multiverse, kind of a connective tissue sort of person, like, oh, some movies might only show up for an end credit scene, and in other movies might play a significant role as a mentor or sort of commander type person, kind of leading the team, but from the Batcave sort of thing, which I find really interesting. And I think Keaton showed with Birdman that he still has that Batman. He definitely still got it. And an actor of that, those chops, and bringing something like that in. And I would hope that in the future, maybe we could do a Batman Beyond with him and, you know, get a Terry McGinnis in there. Cause I really like that character's arc. We'll see, but I'm really excited by the news. What about you?
I'm excited to see, as you said, I'm excited to see Michael Keaton put on the cape and cowl again, or not even the cape and cowl, just be Bruce Wayne again, you know? And if it's going to be the Bruce Wayne, Terry McGinnis dynamic that they're hoping, that they're trying to eye on for this Flashpoint movie, I'll be so excited for that. The only concerns that I have, and I guess because it's in early development, we don't know, are they going to, and I guess this is a question that maybe you can answer for me also, are they still putting this in the DCEU universe, or is it just going to be like Joker as a one-off?
No, this is DCEU. So okay, this is going to be connective tissue. Now, the Batman is going to be standalone.
I figured.
However, okay, I believe Joker is still standalone. However, I would not be surprised if somehow they weave in the backstory of Joker with the Pattinson Batman, since the Pattinson Batman is supposed to take place, I guess, in the 80s or 90s.
It's supposed to be in the 80s and 90s, yeah.
And I wonder if they're going to basically make it like a, okay, like 1989, 1992, like that already happened for this Bruce Wayne. And now we're seeing a alternate version where Joker was actually conceived before Batman, unlike the 89 version where Batman already existed before Joker became
Joker. Came out.
I'm really curious, and I hope they don't go too convoluted. And I do feel like, and I talked about it on Thunderpop, I feel like the CW multiverse crossover was almost like a test for this. Like, can people who aren't really engrossed in the comics and the lore, can they understand and can they keep up with the idea of a multiverse? Which I've heard from some people who don't even watch the CW shows that they did watch the crossover event because they heard it was really cool.
And I was just going to say, to your point, I think I've heard more people on Twitter talk about the crossover more than I've ever seen anybody talk about the CW shows in its standalones. Just like how I hate to use this as a guinea pig, but how the Defenders was for, you know, Daredevil, Black, Luke Cage, and a couple of others. And I was just, I'm really excited to see what DCEU is now doing going towards this new direction. I'm not skeptical. I'm optimistic to see what they're going to do. And I hope with Flashpoint, you do try to bring some of the elements from, you know, Batman versus Superman, where, you know, the Flash talks about, you know, it was Martha all along, not Martha all along, it was Lois all along, and, you know, trying to bring that story arc back together. And I feel like that'll be something interesting to try to tie in. If they don't, no harm, no foul. But I like the direction where DCEU is going. And like you said, with this slow momentum of this pandemic, DCEU has been taking a lot of momentum and shifting it towards its side. And it's pretty interesting to see what they're doing, especially like with all of this and how they're marketing everything. So I'm pretty excited. I'm really waiting to see more about, you know, the Batman and what they're going to do with Flash. Also, we still don't have anything about Wonder Woman, because Wonder Woman was supposed to come out in July, and I think that's also been delayed until like August or October, one of the two.
October, right. As of right now, I believe October. However, I honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if we see that get pushed again to spring and then move Tenet to October, November.
Okay, so either one of them doesn't compete with each other. See, that would be smart. Okay, I see what you're saying. So with that being said, I'm interested now. Like, I wasn't, if you would have asked me 4 years ago after Batman vs. Superman and Suicide Squad, if I was excited for the DCU, I would have told you no. Now with everything that they have built off of this momentum during the pandemic, pushing some of the notes together, and even just we're maybe getting a Michael Keaton. It's in talks. It's not even saying like it's going to happen. But even for this to be talks has piqued my interest. And now I'm excited to see what they're going to do with this. And I'm ready for whatever we have in store for the DCEU.
No, definitely. I'm 100% with you, and I'm here for it when it happens and however it happens. And I'm glad that Keaton, who, you know, didn't want to be a part of this sort of thing, is obviously he's really invested. So I'm down for it.
Yes, I am so down for it. Well, all right. Now we're going to go into some of the movies that we've seen before we get into the lodge. Do you want me to talk about your vision, or did you want to talk about the Jon Stewart?
Yeah, if you want to do your vision, like I told you before we started recording, I've only seen like 45 minutes of it. From what I've heard, I guess I'm in for a downhill swing after these first 45 minutes. So
I wouldn't even
interested call it to see what you have to take.
So I was just going to say, I'm actually quite the opposite. I felt like for Eurovision Song Contest, the story of the Fire Saga, which was produced by Will Ferrell, which also stars him with, directed by David Dobkin. I haven't really seen anything that Dobkin done in a very long time, but besides the point, it basically follows Will Ferrell and Rachel McAdams going on to Eurovision, which is this international singing competition where you go work up, you sing some songs, and you do some really cool, like, I would say costuming, aesthetics, and things of that nature. I haven't really saw Eurovision, so I'm spitballing about what it kind of is, but I will say, for what I watched, I hate to put it this way, Johnny, for the first 40 minutes of the movie, I'm like, where are we going? I don't care for the first 40 minutes of it, you know? I'm sitting there like, all right, Will Ferrell and Rachel McAdams is going to find some way to be in this Eurovision competition. And I'm like, all right, they got into it. What's next? And towards the end of the movie, you can tell like they had a story and a concept together, and they started finally piecing up together just a little bit towards the end of the movie. And it kind of had, I wouldn't say a heartfelt message. It was just kind of like one of those Will Ferrell movies where you're like, oh, wow, this was fun. It's not like, you know, Step Brothers funny. It's not Anchorman funny. I don't think it's even that kind of funny. I think it's more on the lines of like Kicking and Screaming is the one I would use in terms of funny. It's like, okay. Oh, it has some chuckles, but it's not amazingly funny, you know?
Okay.
And I enjoyed it for the ride. I enjoyed it. But towards the end, I said, okay, this isn't terrible as I figured it would be, but it's still, it's fine. I gave it a 2.5 after the end of it. Because at the beginning of the movie, I'm like, oh God, we're in Sherlock Holmes, Will Ferrell movie again. Oh God, this is about to be terrible. But it ended up landing, and it ended up doing something that most singing competitions movies are trying to start doing since Pitch Perfect has done it. And that's the only spoiler I'm gonna give to you before I say anything else about it. And I was like, ah, wow, that was a heartfelt message. Okay, pretty dope. 2.5. I'll give it that. It wasn't terrible. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, from what I've seen so far, and like I've said, I can't make a complete judgment on the film yet, but 45 minutes in, I do feel like Ferrell is kind of in that Adam Sandler scape where like he's trying really hard to do like the yuck
yes
comedy. And I feel like now Rachel McAdams, she's there and I think she's really good. But I think any actress in that role probably would have been the same. Been fine, and just yes. Like dealing with this man child who, whatever. But I mean, it's fine. I understand it's a Netflix movie.
And that's what I was going to say. It's basically your typical Netflix movie, but I would put it as like, you know, do you know those, I put Netflix movies in these three categories. Either, wow, that was phenomenal. Like Roma and Irishman, right? Like those are phenomenal movies. Then you have the, oh, okay, I watched that. That was something, mm-hmm. you know, those movies like that. And then there's those Netflix movies where you're like, why did I waste an hour and a half to 2 hours of my time watching it? I put it in the middle. It's not terrible. It's like, oh, okay, I watched it. It's not bad. And I will say one thing. I did not know Rachel McAdams could sing like that. I will put it that way. Most of the singing in here is ad-lib, and you could definitely tell that some of it is like lip sync or ADR. But most of the songs that they were recording, Will Ferrell's recording it, Rachel McAdams to a certain extent is recording it, and finding out what certain parts that Rachel was singing, I was like, wow, I did not think Rachel McAdams could really sing like that. Okay.
Yeah, and from what I've seen, and then also what I've heard from people who've watched the whole thing, like Dan Stevens apparently is phenomenal.
Yes.
The Russian singer.
Yes. Now, granted, I was saying this the entire time, and you probably will agree with me when you watch it. Dan Stevens did do a great job, but I just couldn't get it out of the back of my head. That was a role Ben Stiller should have done, but if Ben Stiller was like maybe 10 or 15 years younger, it would have been a mm-hmm. great Ben Stiller role because it reminds me of him in Zoolander. But
okay.
because he's, you know, up in age now, I don't think he could have done it. But literally, I was thinking in the back of my mind, wow, this is literally a Ben Stiller role if Ben Stiller was younger. So yeah, Dan Stevens killed it out of the park. One thing also, these Iceland accents, I have to address them. Will Ferrell tries to do a decent job about 70% of the movie, as I think you could tell in the first 40 minutes. He tries to keep the Iceland accent up. He tries. He really does. When he starts screaming, when he starts raising his octave a lot, you can tell that it catches off. The person who was really consistent with it was, of course, Rachel McAdams. And I hate to say it, as much as I love a young Pierce Brosnan, you could tell like he was trying, but that accent that he has from, I keep forgetting what country he's from, but that accent, that his native tongue that he has is kind of way too much. And you're like, ah.
See, in the little bit of him I've seen, I really like him as this disappointed dad.
Yes, yes.
Like, even just the shots with him in the bar with this younger woman, and he's just so disappointed and so upset because it's obvious, like, he's this Icelandic stud and his son is this bumbling idiot.
Yes, and you can, like, as you watch throughout the rest of the movie, you can tell, like, Pierce Brosnan knows what movie he's in, and he's having fun with it, so that's why I'm not trying to give him that much heart, but you can definitely tell, like, he's having a ball doing this, and it was fun. It was, like I said, entertaining. If you're looking for a movie that you really don't need to, like, care about much, and you want to just see some surprising performances, I will say it, some surprising performances, including with Demi Lovato, which I won't get into her character, but yeah, other than that, yeah, it was fine. 2.5. I'll give it that. It was fine.
Okay, cool. Cool. So Julian gave you something to watch. I'm going to give you something not to watch. and that would be Irresistible on Apple, which initially I thought, because I saw good. The ads, I liked the trailer. It was initially supposed to be out in theaters. And then I saw, oh, it's on Apple TV. Cool. So I go to Apple TV Plus, and it is one of those $20 rentals. And I was like, well, I guess I'm going to go ahead and do the deed. This is one of those, such a regret spending $20 on this movie. I gave it 2 stars, and I normally...
Damn!
I dig Jon Stewart. Like I loved him. I loved his Daily Show. I still actually really enjoy Trevor as well. But oh man, this movie. Steve Carell, Rose Byrne, Chris Cooper, Mackenzie Davis, Topher Grace, Natasha Lyonne. Currently sits at a 41, I think, on Rotten Tomatoes.
Okay.
So I haven't watched Space Force, but I've heard nothing but bad things. And this political movie, like, Steve Carell, it's not very funny. His acting's good.
Okay.
Rose Byrne, I think, is funnier playing a role that I guess isn't supposed to be that funny. Like, I feel like she does really good as this sort of, like, almost like Fox person.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, Chris Cooper is fine. Mackenzie Davis is fine. I actually thought Mackenzie Davis was better in Terminator, where she was playing a cyborg type person. And here she plays the daughter of this man who was a colonel. And now the left wing is trying to basically get him to run for mayor to kind of swing this right wing city left and small town. And it shows a lot about how messed up the whole election process is and how much money goes into it that is like it that shouldn't be. And I know there's some undercurrents there that maybe I could, if I went back and rewatched it while it's still available to me for that $20, I'm sure I could probably deep dive it and like find some like really deep political undertones, but I wasn't trying to do that. And I was just trying to enjoy my evening, and it just became a chore, really. It's not the worst thing comedy wise I've seen this year, but I didn't enjoy this film, and I really thought it would, that I would. I'm a Jon Stewart fan. I'm a Steve Carell fan. I like Mackenzie Davis. I like Rose Byrne, but yeah, it did not hit right for me. The acting is decent, but not great. The premise is better than the film itself, and I think the trailer sells it as something that it's not quite. It's fine. It's definitely not worth $20. I would definitely say, you know, if you had an Apple TV Plus subscription and they were offering it on their streaming for free, then fine. I don't even think I would give this like a $6 rental, to be honest.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I watched it by myself on a Sunday evening when nothing else was on. I had just been watching a meaningless golf tournament all day, and I was like, yeah, let me get some new content in, and saw the ads and went and watched it, and whew, no, not worth $20, folks. Stay away until it is free and you've got, you know, plenty of free time. Because there's better political comedies, there's better political dramas, I understand it's an election year and all of that, but this did not hit at all for me.
So I was going to say, I was really anticipating it, because right before, you know, the whole city shut down, I was watching trailers for it in Alamo Drafthouse, and I was like, oh, this might be a movie that I'm down to watch. I think it's going to be interesting. Byron looks phenomenal. You know, and Steve Carell, I feel like he's trying to come up on a comedic stride again, because as you can tell, they have Space Force that's coming out. We have this movie coming out. I think he has another movie coming out within the 18 months time period. So you can tell, like, him, Will Ferrell, and a couple of others are trying to get that swing back to be back in comedy. So I thought, why not? You know, give it a try. Mm-hmm. And you're right. When I saw the $20 thing, I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to spend $20 to watch this movie. But, you know, some people told me it was funny, so I was going to really entice it and think about it. But thank you for letting me not waste my money, because I would put it the same way with here. With Eurovision, if it was $20 to rent, I probably would tell you guys, no, not to like spend the $20 either. But if it was like $10 or $5, absolutely. And since it's on Netflix for free, like, yeah, it's better than most of the stuff that's on Netflix now that's trying to be a comedy. So definitely go watch it, you know. But it's disappointing. I really wanted to see Steve Carell with a win this year, because Space Force is supposed to be the new Office. It sounds like it's definitely not going to be. And this looked promising, especially from Jon Stewart. To your point, before Trevor Noah, Jon Stewart was somebody I used to watch right after South Park and watch The Daily Show with Jon Stewart and like him like just ram home on a lot of people, you know. And I enjoyed it.
And now, he was political with a purpose, but kept it humorous.
Right. And I enjoyed that. And I wanted that. And now you're telling me that his movie might not be great. Oh, it's disappointing. Disappointing. Well, all right then. And what you say, you gave it the 2 stars, right?
Yeah. And I feel like that was being generous simply because, like I said, the performances are fine. I think, you know, the premise is there. I think I was sold a different movie. I think the trailer sold a different movie than what I saw. And I don't think the laughs hit. I don't think, and you know, I feel like it's one of those films where the majority of like the somewhat laugh out loud moments are in the trailer and in the film itself. You know, I like that there's some heartfelt stuff in there. And I like that they're doing a look at the political system and how it's kind of messed up. It's even at a small town level, but it is what it is and it's not great.
Okay, fair point. All right. So it looks like I'm probably going to wait until it's like for $4 or $5 rent. Cool. I will keep that a note. All right. Well, before we get into our final movie of the evening, which is The Lodge, we do have a quick note from our sponsor. So we'll do that and then right into the movie. All right. And we're back. So, Johnny, we both saw The Lodge. You saw it way before I did. You saw it at Fantastic Festival last year.
And no, I actually saw it.
No, Overlook. Yeah, you watched it in New Orleans in the summer of last year.
Yeah, a little over a year ago. It's crazy to think that had COVID not hit, then about a month ago, I would have been in New Orleans seeing some horror thriller movies. But yeah, so The Lodge dropped recently. Streaming
on Hulu, and, yes,
yeah. And this was a movie that was notoriously delayed for forever and ever, and it finally came out in theaters, I want to say early this year,
January, February,
before the shutdown. And this was done by Hammer Horror. If people recognize that, they were very famous in the 60s, 70s, and doing some interesting stuff with some classic monsters. And I think, you know, it's brought to us by the directors of Goodnight Mommy, which was a film I saw at Fantastic Fest. And The Lodge did play at Fantastic Fest. I saw it at Overlook, and it was actually already, I had already seen it. So I did not watch it again, just because my initial feelings on the film are I really like it. But it is one of those films that once you are done watching it, you feel a certain type of way, and you don't feel good inside. And that wasn't a type of feeling I wanted to feel again.
So I was just going to say to that point. All right. So I'm not going to try to spoil as much as I can until we get to the spoiler part of the podcast. So going into it, you know, I'm watching and I feel like I got frustrated with Alamo. I've been watching trailers for this since late last year when I was watching movies at Alamo. And I'm so excited. You know, I'm excited to watch this and I'm hearing great things about it. Then there was the second or last trailer. I can't remember which number trailer it was. And they kept pulling up at Alamo. And I was kind of frustrated because I was like, oh, wow, they're making it a certain way. And I don't want to spoil that just yet for anybody who hasn't watched The Lodge yet. So I'm getting frustrated about it. Then I watched a movie this past weekend. Boy, was I wrong about the trailer. To your point, Johnny, I was the first... All right, try not to spoil anything. But the first 30 minutes, no, not even the first 30 minutes, the first 10 minutes of the movie, I'm like, oh, this ain't the kind of movie I thought I was going to get myself into. Okay. And with everything that was happening towards the end of the movie, like the second and third act, again, what I think it does rate really well, like how Hereditary did and The Babadook did, it just cranks the tension up so damn good. To the point where you're sitting there like, what the hell is going on? Until the end where I'm sitting in my couch, Johnny, I will shit you not. I'm sitting in my couch and I'm like, what the fuck did I just get done watching? What is this? Like, oh my God, you know? And I agree. I couldn't agree more. Like, this is one of those movies where I'm like, with like I was with Hereditary. Watched it once. Yeah, I don't know if it's going to catch another rewatch anytime soon because it made me that uncomfortable. I completely agree with you. Like,
yeah, it was one of those movies where, you know, packed house at a festival, and after watching it, getting out, we literally walked out, and it was just a silence, audience silence, walking out, and at a festival that's very rare because usually people are chatting and wanting to know what people thought about.
Yeah, and having conversations. Yeah.
And, you know, we saw this very late May, early June of 2019. And, you know, it's sweltering in New Orleans at that time. And I joked with a coworker that you know as well about folks in New Orleans, how everywhere you go in New Orleans, because it's so humid and hot outside, they are not scared of AC, man. They turn that thing down. And so the theaters in New Orleans, I mean, I know people joke about theaters being cold, but man, theaters in New Orleans, it's something else. You bring a jacket and then you walk outside and start sweating.
I tell people all the time, coming from my neck of the woods, which is Beaumont, Texas, which is humidity is always usually at 80%. Y'all think it's cold in Austin theaters? It is completely better in Austin than it is in New Orleans and Beaumont. Like, it is humid and it crank it up to almost, it feels like it's almost 30 degrees. But yes, to your point, yes, I can agree.
Which I feel like that's the way you need to see this movie. Like, you, yes. you need to watch this movie while you are cold. Like, watch this movie. Like, turn your AC down to like 60.
60, yes.
And put a fan on and sit down, bundle up, get some blankets, and even if it's because it's summertime, get some blankets, turn the AC down, and then that's when you need to experience this movie. You need to be cold. You need to be kind of uncomfortable because the stuff that happens in this movie is uncomfortable.
So uncomfortable.
And I think this is Riley Coe. I think this is her best performance in a movie.
I was going to say that, you know, and I was saying this all the entire time while I was watching it. I was like, wow, you know, I was like, she reminds me of somebody. And I found out she's Elvis Presley's oldest granddaughter, right? And it's like that chin makes that she has the Elvis Presley chin in it. And it always bothered me. But by the end of the movie, I was like, oh, my God. Out of all the movies I've seen Riley Coe in, this is her best performance. And she plays this role so damn well. And I was thinking about this the other day too. Like, the kids, as much as I, you know, have a love-hate relationship with kid actors, child actors, Jaden Martell and Laia McHugh, oh my God, phenomenal job. I won't get into details until we get to the spoiler part, but phenomenal job.
Yeah, and I mean, the premise isn't even that crazy, you know? You have this dad with these two kids, and, you know, kids aren't happy that he's dating this young, you know, young hot woman. And so they got to go spend some time together because dad wants them to gel, and then stuff starts happening. And then, you know, the directors really put everything multiple times turn things on its head to where you are not sure what exactly is going on. Like, is this supernatural? Is something else going on? Because stuff gets weird and they put you in this place where the characters have nowhere to go.
Yes. And
you put it in an uncomfortable environment along with the uncomfortable situation of these kids with this woman that they've already decided they don't like before they even got to know her.
Met her. Yes. Yes. And I was going to say,
which is that's normal. Like, I understand that. Like, that's normal for kids. Like, they're going to gravitate to their biological mom, and they're going to be mad that their dad has brought this new woman in and then now is going to leave them with her.
Right. And one of the biggest things, and I was thinking about this, is I was thinking of putting myself in the kid's shoes. You know, if I had to go be with my dad's girlfriend and we already been butting heads and we already feel some type of way about you. And we've already been butting heads beforehand. And now we're in a secluded, cold ass lodge on one of the holidays we always celebrate with our mom. I'm definitely butting more heads with you. I'm definitely going to be more angry and more resentment towards you. And the movie plays on that so damn well. It was really well done. Now, again, I don't want to explain the trailer to the final trailer too much if anybody hasn't seen it yet, because I don't want to spoil anything yet. But the way certain things and certain conversations happen while this film is going on and the events are occurring just makes you really sit there and start, like you said, Johnny, questioning yourself and questioning either what if it's X, Y, and Z. Maybe it's just supernatural things happening. Maybe it's just, you know, another thing that's happening. And you're just sitting there and just going through the motions. And it all boils to the end of the movie where something happens. And you're like, oh, no. Please don't take it the way I think. And it did.
Yeah, because you take certain situations that seem so innocent. And this isn't a spoiler because it's in all of the trailers, but Riley's character wearing this hat that belonged to their mom and them getting so mad and making her so uncomfortable about wearing that hat. And use those little scenes, those little interactions, and they make the audience uncomfortable because you're like, oh, that is kind of an awkward situation. Like you feel for Riley's character, like,
yep.
Oh man, like she didn't even know. And these kids are being such, you know, a certain kind of way towards her that she maybe doesn't deserve. And then, you know, things start escalating and changing. And these kids kind of regret the way they've been.
So, all right. So I guess the thing is, I guess that's the reason why I think we need to just jump into spoilers, because this movie, we can't talk about it without spoiling certain things, right? Because it has a really great story and everything kind of balls into a snowball and rolls over with each other to get to a certain point. So do you think we should just jump into spoilers now before we continue talking about this movie? Because I think we're going to accidentally tiptoe into spoilers one way or another.
Yeah, I think we're good to go into spoiler territory, because there's no other kind of way we can talk about this without going there.
All right, perfect. So again, this is your spoiler warning for The Lodge. If you have not seen The Lodge, pause the podcast, go watch The Lodge, and come back, because we're about to jump into the spoiler territory. How Jaden and Laya felt about Alicia Silverstone getting, like, shooting herself in the beginning of this movie, right? And I'm going to be honest. If I was Jaden, I would feel the exact same way, you know? And to your point, like, I was kind of... what's the word I'm looking for? I was surprised that they even let Alicia Silverstone jump to that rock. You know what I'm saying? I was so scared that they even let that happen. And, oh, wow. Fantastic. Like, so let me ask you, how did you feel about all of that happening?
Yeah, I mean, it was meant to make you feel a certain kind of way. And I think it goes perfectly into... why, I mean, not to make an excuse for why the kids act the way they do, but because they, I mean, once you see the film, you're like, man, these little, oh man, I would beat that. I would beat, man. my mom would have just tore that up if you would have acted like this kind of way.
Yes.
But you add to that, like, when people think of bullying, they don't really think of, like, okay, they think of, like, kids bullying on kids, and they think of, like, people bullying on people. They think of, especially in the world we live in today, they think about cops being bullies. But then when you kind of turn the table and you're like, okay, we're going to make these kids bully this woman, and this woman comes from a certain background where she's had some trauma, and you put her in a certain mental state where she's fragile, and, you know, the the man, like he's a, I think a psychiatrist or a psychologist, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
But he can't even fix this kind of damage. And it takes it to this place where, yeah, you bullied this woman to where you brought up all of these feelings that she has from her past, and she takes them out on it. And it's just like, well, you can't just do that. And yeah, these kids were bad so kids.
I was talking about this with Courtney the other day, right after we watched the movie, right? And I was sitting there and I'm just, you know, just thinking, and I was telling her, I don't know if I'm mad at the kids or I'm just like, y'all deserve what happened to y'all, you know? And I don't know, because like you said, if I was in their shoes, I would completely understand what happened, you know? I would feel some type of way about it. I would like
say something. I would probably act out. I would be like, you're not my mom. Like, don't tell me what to do. But these kids go to a new level.
Right.
To where you're playing off of these emotions and these things that happened to this woman in the past. And then also you're in this certain kind of situation being isolated where this woman can't cope. Like her brain and her psyche is a glass.
Fragile. Right.
And you guys keep pouring water in it with the things you're doing. Like eventually that glass can't hold. Like it's going to spill.
Right. And to Johnny's point, and we're going to barely discuss this really quickly. Riley Coe's background is the fact that she comes from this cult, the suicidal cult, and she's the only sole survivor, And there's a lot of videos about it. Their father, which I think is the weird thing, but Richard Armitage does a phenomenal job being the father, the dismissive dad, which we'll get into later. He basically says, you know what? Not only am I going to start questioning and interviewing you and all this other stuff, I'm going to start dating you. And not only that, I'm going to tell your mom we're finalizing the divorce. I'm going to marry this woman. Yeah, let's go from there. And Alicia Silverstone kills herself. And you're like, you know what? Bet I'm going to come for you. And like you said, you see it in the middle of the movie where Riley, I keep forgetting her name, her name in the book, I mean in the movie, but she's trying to keep her sanity up front. She's taking her meds. She has her dog that's literally her link to say, hey, this is my new life. This is my new purpose in life. And I'm not going to remember what happened to me when I was a child. You know what I'm saying? And she's trying to keep that trauma buried, moved away, set aside. And these kids are poking at her. They take her meds. They pretend they're in purgatory. They believe, and they write out a whole eulogy on how these kids died in a carbon monoxide accident. And you're just sitting there like, y'all are poking a bear. And it's only going to take one good poke before she goes ablaze. And what happens? The damn dog dies. Her link to the new world and her meds. Like, she's what? I want to say about a week off her meds or a couple of days off her meds. I don't remember. Do you remember, Johnny?
Mm-hmm. Like, I want to say it's probably been a week, like just trying to guesstimate the number of nights
that happened, right?
And the stuff that happens. And you put this woman in an uncomfortable situation. And then on top of that, yeah, the dog was, I mean, it was John Wick thing where like for some reason, us and our animals, like if that animal is our connection to our humanity or us being a good person, and you take that away, then
I'm going left.
People snap.
Right. I'm going left and there's nothing you can do to pull me back. And like I said, the pills were helping just a little bit. But then you got rid of the pills and she's like, all right, my sanity is this dog. And then the dog gets away. I'm like, oh no. And what sucks, I was like, these kids are terrible. Don't get me wrong. But what comes up after what happens to Riley, I'm just like, wait, I don't think this movie should have took it this far. but it did. Like, she literally starts burning her knees, like the old, like back to the 1600s of Catholicism kind of like penance, where she's penancing herself, trying to say, I'm in purgatory. She's burning her knees with like hot logs. And she takes the gun that they have in the in a lodge, and she's trying to kill herself and kill the kids so they can release themselves from purgatory and go to heaven. And I'm like, oh, y'all really done it now. And the husband comes. I'm not the husband, but Richard Armitage, the dad and the boyfriend comes in, and the kids are like petrified at this point. And you're like, Dad, please come get this girl. She is all too much. Like, Grace, that's her name. Grace, she's doing too much. Grace, she's really out of wall right now. And so Richard comes out and he's like, hey, it's okay. Give me the gun. And Grace just shoots a point blank. It's like, it's okay. It's okay. We're gonna go and walk and be in heaven together. I'm like, no. No. I'm sorry. Mm-mm. No. And the way the film ends and the way the unsettling ending of this film happened, I'm just like, that's way too much not drama, but that was way too much anxiety for me. I was like, yeah, cool. Great movie. I don't know if I could watch that again. I don't know.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough watch. Like, by the time you get towards the third act, it's very tough. And the one of the negatives I will say is it does definitely kind of play a small sort of light of like mental instability and kind of, you know, understanding towards people like that. And then also like, how did these kids make like those newspaper clippings and like all, like how did they do all of that stuff? And then also like, are there like, they're really kids that are that mean?
Right. And really, so,
and they have the ability to go that far. I get it was part of the story and that's where you wanted to take it, but is that something that's like, is that really doable? Can kids do that these days? Which maybe I'm just old and stupid, but I don't know. I mean,
no, I agree with you, John.
It makes sense within the story, but in the back of my mind, I'm like, kids can do that? Like they can make that?
No, and I was going to say that was my biggest like, that and I hate to say it, the slow pacing between like right after Alicia Silverstone kills herself to when they get to like the first two nights of the lodge, I felt like it was way too much.
It was exposition, and then also we didn't really get to know like not crazy Riley.
Right.
Or Grace. Grace is her name.
Yeah, we didn't get to know true Grace post suicidal cult. No.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you. And that's why I was just like, okay. That's why I gave the movie a 3.5, but literally I feel like I should have gave it a 4. But yeah, it was fun. Like, besides that, and I like you to your point, I don't know any kids that would literally know how to write an entire eulogy on a newspaper or website. And I'm sorry, I'm going to spoil this part. How did Jaden know how to hang himself without breaking his own neck? You know? And I'm just like, can't kids know how to do that? Like, I know my 12, 13-year-old cousin can know how to, like, hack the Wi-Fi sometimes, but does he know how to write an entire eulogy and make it sound believable and hang himself without any repercussions on his neck? No, I'm sorry. I don't think kids are that creative. I agree with you. No, I don't believe that.
Yeah, I also gave it a 3.5. I haven't revisited it in the year or so since I saw it. I mean, there may come a time where I'm like, huh, let me watch The Lodge. I got curious about Hereditary once before, and then I got 20 minutes in and was like, yeah, no, I'm good. I still really like you. You were still a top 10 movie for me for that year. But yeah, after I wasn't there for more.
Oh, goodness. I was about to say, quick story before we, like, start wrapping up. I have a friend that just got done watching Hereditary, and he wanted me to watch it because we were supposed to switch movies. I have never watched Tusk, right? I've never watched Tusk with, what's that boy's name? He just fell off the earth. Justin Long. There you go. Mm-hmm. Justin Long. And I know you've owned it and you've been talking about it for a while. And
I even have a I Don't Want to Die in Canada t-shirt that I got from the premiere at Fantastic Fest 2014.
14, right? Yeah. See, I remember this story and I was like, wow, this is a great story Johnny keeps telling me about. I guess I should watch the Tusk, and it was on Netflix. And I watched it and I'm not going to lie, it was creepy, but it wasn't like Hereditary or The Lodge creepy.
And no, there's laughs and there's lightheartedness in there, and right. Haley Joel Osment is good and fun in there, and
yes,
Justin Long's good, and you've got the Johnny Depp's character in there as the investigator, yes. and so you have some relief from the darkness.
But then when I was about to say, then when he went to go watch The Hereditary, because I was supposed to watch it with him, and I was like, I need to be mentally and emotionally ready to watch that. And when he watched her by himself, all he could say was, never again. Absolutely nope. Never yep. again. And nope. to your point, like my mom was trying to watch it, I think 6 or 7 months ago. And it was right at the point where I keep forgetting the girl's name who is having an asthma attack and she's getting on the van. I'm like, yeah, I think I'm done. And I literally had to walk out of my mom's living room and go into another room because I was like, yeah,
it's just uncomfortable.
Right. I can't do this right now.
Like, I get wanting to feel, you know, you watch movies because you want to feel emotions and you want to feel, and movies are made to evoke those emotions. And movies like this and Hereditary and the like are meant to evoke
emotion,
sorrow and sadness and depression and anxiety, and especially in times like we're living in now, like those aren't feelings that we really want to feel. Mm-mm. By choice, because nope. We're already feeling them just because of the world we live in right now. I was actually chatting with a director friend who I've talked to at Fantastic Fest, and we were chatting over Messenger, and her talking about like their situation where she's from in Laos and how they haven't had a new COVID case in like 60 days.
What? Okay.
And they're considered a third world country and they're pretty much back to normal. And I was like, yeah, not here. She was like, how are things back in Austin? I was like, not like that. Not like that.
And to your point, I think that's what made this movie even that much worse for me, more impactful for me, just because we're locked in for over 100 days, and they were locked in for what, a week, maybe two, and just she went stir crazy. So I'm like, yeah, this is a little right on the nose right now.
Cabin fever.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, great movie, let's keep that in the, we'll maybe watch maybe 3 or 4 years from now. Cool.
Yep.
So, as you could tell from our consensus, great horror film, very unsettling movie. If you want to watch it, by all means, viewer discretion is advised. It's a great movie, but if you feel uncomfortable at the end of the movie, just know what you're getting yourself into. But other than that, is there any final notes you want to say about this film? Because I know you watched it over a year ago.
Yeah, I think we pretty much covered it. We gave our disclaimers. We did all the warning signs. So, viewer discretion advised. This is not for the faint of heart. It's not super gory or uncomfortable in that manner. It's uncomfortable in a lot of other different ways.
Yes.
And if that type of stuff bothers you, you might not want to get involved with this one.
Nope. If you want to, bring a friend so y'all can try to comfort each other
afterwards. Yeah, you can suffer together.
Other than that, viewer discretion is advised. All right, guys, that is the end of our review for The Lodge. And I think that pretty much brings the podcast to an end today. Do you have anything else you wanted to say? Any other movies that you're looking forward to for the next 2 weeks? I don't think there's any other on-demand movie that's coming out in 2 weeks.
No, I mean, I'll have to take a look at streaming calendars, see if there's anything going on. I mean, even this Saturday for 4th of July, I'm going with the girl to the drive-in for Independence Day. With a virtual fireworks, because fireworks are not allowed because they don't want gatherings and whatnot. So we're going to go do Independence Day from the safety of my vehicle.
And see, I don't know what I'm going to do for July 4th yet. I usually never celebrate it, but I feel like this is the one time where I need to get out and go be with some family. So I might go back home this weekend, but I'm kind of worried about that, but that's a whole different conversation. But, Charlize Theron has a film coming out on Netflix, and I don't think it's coming out anytime soon. It's called The Old Guard, I think is what it's called, with a whole bunch of immortals. It's on you. Its trailer just came out today. I think it comes out in mid-July, but just that's another movie. We'll figure something out that we're going to talk about. But before we wrap, Johnny, where can the kids find you?
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Johnny the Wonder, and on Letterboxd, you can follow my reviews and lists and everything at Johnny Boy Wonder.
And for me, I would say you can find me at Instagram and Twitter at King Julian Owens. Thank you guys for joining us for our third episode remotely from home. You'll catch more of us going through the weeks ahead. Thank you for always staying tuned with us and being there for us, and we'll see you guys soon.
Later.